Captain?
Yes, number one?
Just had a sort of report thingy from number two.
Oh, dear.
High up in the bridge of the ship, the captain stared out into the infinite reaches of space with mild irritation. From where he reclined beneath a wide, domed bubble, he could see before and above him the vast panorama of stars through which they were moving, a panorama that had thinned out noticeably during the course of the voyage. Turning and looking backwards over the vast 2-mile bulk of the ship, he could see the far denser mass of stars behind them, which seemed to form almost a solid band. This was the view through the galactic centre from which they were travelling, and indeed had been travelling for years, at a speed that he couldn't quite remember at the moment, but he knew it was terribly fast. It was something approaching the speed of something or other, or was it 3 times the speed of something else? Jolly impressive, anyway. He peered into the bright distance behind the ship, looking for something. He did this every few minutes or so, but never found what he was looking for. He didn't let it worry him, though. The scientist chaps had been very insistent that everything was going to be perfectly all right, providing nobody panicked and everybody got on and did their bit in an orderly fashion. He wasn't panicking. As far as he was concerned, everything was going splendidly. He dabbed at his shoulder with a large, frothy sponge. It crept back into his mind that he was feeling mildly irritated about something. Now, what was all that about? A slight cough alerted him to the fact that the ship's first officer was still standing nearby. Nice chap, number one. Not of the very brightest, had the odd spot of difficulty doing up his shoelaces, but jolly good officer material for all that. The captain wasn't a man to kick a chap when he was bending over trying to do up his shoelaces, however long it took him. Not like that ghastly number two, strutting about all over the place, polishing his buttons, issuing reports every hour.
Ship still moving, Captain. Still on course, Captain. Oxygen level still being maintained, Captain.
Give it a miss, was the captain's vote. Ah, yes. That was the thing that had been irritating him. He peered down at number one.
Yes, Captain, he was shouting something or other about having found some prisoners.
The captain thought about this. Seemed pretty unlikely to him, but he wasn't one to stand in his officer's way.
Well, perhaps that'll keep him happy for a bit, he said. He's always wanted some.
Ford Prefect and Arthur Dent trudged onwards up the ship's apparently endless corridors. Number two marched behind them, barking the occasional order about not making any false moves or trying any funny stuff. They seemed to have passed at least a mile of continuous brown Hessian wall weave. Finally, they reached a large steel door which slid open when number two shouted at it. They entered. To the eyes of Ford Prefect and Arthur Dent, the most remarkable thing about the ship's bridge was not the 50-foot diameter hemispherical dome which covered it and through which the dazzling display of stars shone down on them. To people who have eaten at the restaurant at the end of the universe, such wonders are commonplace. Nor was it the bewildering array of instruments that crowded the long circumferential wall around them. To Arthur, this was exactly what spaceships were traditionally supposed to look like, and to Ford, it looked thoroughly antiquated. It confirmed his suspicions that Disaster Area's stunt ship had taken them back at least 1 million, if not 2 million, years before their own time. No, the thing that really caught them off balance was the bath. The bath stood on a 6-foot pedestal of rough-hewn blue water crystal and was of a baroque monstrosity not often seen outside the Maxim Megalon Museum of Diseased Imaginings. An intestinal jumble of plumbing had been picked out in gold leaf rather than decently buried at midnight in an unmarked grave. The taps and shower attachment would have made a gargoyle jump. As the dominant centrepiece of a starship bridge, it was terribly wrong. And it was with the embittered air of a man who knew this that number two approached it.
Captain, sir!
He shouted through clenched teeth. A difficult trick, but it had years during which to perfect it. A large, genial face and a genial foam-covered arm popped up above the rim of the monstrous bath.
Ah, hello, number two, said the captain, waving a cheery sponge. Having a nice day?
Number two snapped even further to attention than he already was.
I have brought you the prisoners I located in Freezer Base 7, sir, he yapped.
Ford and Arthur coughed in confusion.
Hello, they said.
The captain beamed at them. So number two had really found some prisoners. Well, good for him, thought the captain.
Nice to see a chap doing what he's best at.
Oh, hello there, he said to them. Excuse me, not getting up, just having a quick bath. Well, gin and tonic's all round then. Look in the fridge, number one.
Certainly, sir. It is a curious fact, and one to which no one knows quite how much importance to attach, that something like 85% of all known worlds in the galaxy, be they primitive or highly advanced, have invented a drink called gin and tonics, or gin-tonics, or gin-ond-onics, or any one of a thousand or more variations on the same phonetic theme. The drinks themselves are not the same, and vary between the Silvolvian shinandomnigs, which is ordinary water served at slightly above room temperature, and the Gagrakakan zin-antonics, which kills cows at 100 paces. And in fact, the one common factor between all of them, beyond the fact that the names sound the same, is that they were all invented and named before the worlds concerned made contact with any other worlds. What can be made of this fact? It exists in total isolation. As far as any theory of structural linguistics is concerned, it is right off the graph, and yet it persists. Old structural linguists get very angry when young structural linguists go on about it. Young structural linguists get deeply excited about it and stay up late at night convinced that they are very close to something of profound importance and end up becoming old structural linguists before their time, getting very angry with the young ones. Structural linguistics is a bitterly divided and unhappy discipline, and a large number of its practitioners spend too many nights drowning their problems in Huizgian Zhodas.